On a brand new Josh Stason's Punch Out, Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics returns to the show for our quarterly AEW business review. As we'll look back in the first 3 months of everything on the business side of AEW that we know about anyway, talking about pay-per-views and attendance and ratings and all those types of things. Kind of see where the company's at, where they might be going, and all that good stuff as well. So we'll talk about that. And then afterward, I'm going to give you a few minutes talking about some of the news that's happened since Brandon and I recorded, which includes a comment that Dave Meltzer made about the WBD exclusive negotiating window with AEW. Tony Khan's comment about Harvey Weinstein comparing to WWE. New hire that just got announced on Monday from AEW. And also this Vince McMahon stock question as well. And also maybe we'll talk about some AEW international TV deals too. So we'll do that for a few minutes after Brandon and I talk. Our chat was recorded on Thursday afternoon, and as always happens, a lot happens between now and then. So now, Brandon Thurston, yours truly, talking all about the business world of AEW from the first 3 months of 2024. It is the quarterly business review series, formerly called the Investor Call Series, coming up right now on Josh Stason's Punch Out. Well, we're back once again for the quarterly check-in, and Brandon Thurston has joined once again from the fantastic WrestleNomics, of course, hot on the beat, the McMahon-Grant WWE lawsuit and all the machinations that are happening there. You can check in
and
with
things
them,
of that nature.
Things of that nature. You can check in with them, of course, weekly on Pollock and Thurston, part of the combined forces of the post-wrestling WrestleNomics network. And also on his own is WrestleNomics, of course. You can subscribe to that if you haven't already. And you just introduced, since the last time we spoke, Brandon, you introduced a new tier to your WrestleNomics.
Oh, I did. That's
service.
Right.
Yes. So people that want to get access to various Google Docs and such, if I remember right. And
if you want access to even more data, if you enjoy spreadsheets like I do, then I'm offering you access to even more spreadsheets. There's TV ratings. All the current subscribers will still get access to the current Google Sheet with all the TV ratings in it. But if you sign up for the $10 tier, you get access not only to that, but to all this YouTube data that I've been scraping since early 2022, as well as all of the quarter hour data. All of this is never before released data that you can have access to as part of this new tier on the Patreon at $10, or this is the regular tier at $5, of course, is still available.
Friends, it is the data equivalent of the Bret Hart Tom McGee match that was forever thought to be lost to history.
Yes.
And then it happened. It was a big event.
Yeah.
And this is very similar. You can, you know, on a Saturday night, tell the spouse, tell your friends, tell them, go out without me.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at some Excel docs.
Neglect your social life.
Yes.
And get into those spreadsheets.
Exactly. Exactly. So again, so we do this every quarter. And Brandon, I haven't told you this yet. We're talking about IP. We're going to change the name of this for this time around.
We are? Okay.
Yes. Yes. A little bit.
Have we notified the U.S. Patent Office?
Well, I'm in contact with actually my friends in Antigua. That's where I do most of my patents, actually.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. A lot
That's
of options.
Safer there. Yeah. No extradition there, I think.
No, definitely not. No, I can't say why Antigua, but everyone can kind of figure it out. Anyway.
Yes.
So. So I was made alert. I was alerted to a Reddit thread of all things, that was a little less than complimentary of, the fact that we were doing this. And hiding behind avatars and calling us clowns and things like that without even having to listen to the show, just the fact we're doing this. And they said, You know, are they doing like pretend numbers and making pretend that the AEW is a public company? And in my mind, I'm like, this is just irritating. These are idiots. And I get to be thinking about it. I'm like, what if people actually think we are doing that? Like we're pretending AEW is a public company. Like people see the investors call portion. So, for the time being, we're going to change this to the AEW quarterly business review, which
Okay.
I think may be more.
What were we calling it before?
The
Investors? You were using
AEW
the
in
investor word? Oh, okay. No, we did not have I don't think WBD was very interested, who may or may not be an investor in All Elite Wrestling LLC. I don't think that they were participating in this or listening
No,
in.
no. So
They could have though.
we're gonna change it to AEW quarterly business call, but I'm gonna still keep the intro music with the whole
Why not?
music. I'm gonna
Why
keep
not?
some elements there
Of course.
because yeah, fuck Reddit. How's that? How's that for starting things off? God, I hate people. You deal with this much more than I do, but
No. You see, I don't deal with it, and that's you just.
oh, that's true. That's true.
It takes discipline. I've been through all of the evolution of this is such a privileged thing to say, but as I've become more and more relatively social media famous within a very small niche of the internet world, you go through these phases of like. Where at the very beginning, you're reading everything that engages with you because maybe it's only a few things a day or something like that. And it becomes very interesting and exciting. And you know, you're sort of connecting with people about things that you're both interested in that are so niche. And then eventually you start to get a big enough following that people feel comfortable being hostile with you. And that's disturbing when you run into that for the first time. But I've gotten to the point, at least recently in the last year or 2 years, where like I've learned that if you're going to have any decent mental health, you have to have the discipline to never look at that stuff. Because if I read something that's just dumb and hostile, it sort of sticks with me. I'm embarrassed to say it will stick with me for a while. And I know I can feel it when I'm on the precipice of like scrolling down to see the replies. I'm like, this could be really upsetting. And here I am in this serene mental state where everything is wonderful and fine. But if I scroll, I know I could completely shatter that. So I just always, I know I have to avoid that to some extent. And I think now lately I'm at the point where like it is just too overwhelming to even look into it at all. So,
I was
I
scrolling
mean,
through. I looked at a WrestleTix post, and
oh, did you?
I looked at the comments below it.
Yes.
So I'm like, why did I even do this? Like this, it's just you can't put just a number out there. I mean, Brian on our Alvarez has got this forever. He said, I'm just going to start putting up the numbers. He's done this forever. I'm just going to put the number out of ring and demo,
Yes.
and just all these people just under it. I mean, it's yeah, it's quite a
What
scene
agenda
out
do you have putting up
there.
this number here? You know what they're trying to say. You know what they're trying to say.
Yeah, people are terrible. Not all people, not the good people listening to this. So what we do, of course, is your first time here. We go through we look at all the business that happened over the past quarter of AEW. Very similar to we have next week, the TKO quarterly call. Not as fun as it used to be with WWE calls and just getting all the some details and information, some teases of stuff coming up, kind of some insight of where they are. AEW doesn't have that, obviously not a public trade company, but we kind of go through all the numbers that we have. Obviously, Brandon does this, for a job essentially, and with all these AEW numbers, so we kind of tie that in with some of the other news events that have happened during the month. So, yeah, let's get into it. Talking January, February, March of 2024. So, some of the big headlines. We'll start with, of course. We had some big free agent signings, big ticket signings. So hopefully AEW is hoping will increase ticket sales, pay-per-view buys, and leading to this eventual TV rights deal they're hoping to sign, which are the two big ones, of course, Kazuchika Okada and Mercedes Moné. And the latter was part of a centered event around here called Big Business that happened, of course, in the greatest city in the land, Boston, Massachusetts, the best city in the country. It starts with a B. That is undisputed. And 9,300 packed the TD Garden there for a gate of just around $346,000. It was, of course, a Wednesday Dynamite, the second essentially centered event, I guess you could say, after CM Punk with the First Dance. And This was this was a big thing for them. Obviously, Okada had debuted, I believe, the week before, and it was either in Atlanta or it was West Virginia. I think it was Duluth, Georgia. That's where it was. Yes, where all the big stars bust onto the scene. We had some new executives that are brought on throughout the month. We have AEW hiring a new chief operating officer, Coach Irby, from Clemson University, and then he came also from extended run in WWE. He's essentially set to oversee all strategic planning, execution of live events, marketing, finance, human resources, licensing, consumer products, and other major lines of business for the company. Of course, they hired a former WWE writer, Jen Pepperman, as their VP of content development. She became hashtag All Elite, and there was some talk about her being the personal writer. The reason she came along is because she was the personal writer for Mercedes Moné and WWE, or Sasha Banks, really kind of closely tied to her. So that was the reason she was brought on. I believe Tony Khan had said afterwards she was writing not just for Mercedes Moné, but for other people as well. QT Marshall returned the company in executive role after wanting to kind of get out there. And you know, there's always stories about him leaving the company because it was too New Japan-centric or moving that direction.
Yes.
And a few months later, he's back with the company and so on. And then Rocky Romero joined the AEW front office. And the fastest rising executive / in-ring talents, I guess you could say, in wrestling, just in his role in all
an executive in two companies.
Yes. Yes. That's pretty good. Making it happen, even with an eye patch and that disability. But yeah, let's talk about these two things, obviously two different sets of signings, one for the public to see and one that's going to influence what the public see, and kind of your thoughts on the, as we sit here, you know, about, you know, less than a couple months after, you know, the two signs of Okada and Mane, which happened in March, new executives. What was your thoughts about all this?
It's good. When did Ospreay come on? Is that after? No, that's before. So we talked about that in Q4.
Yeah, because he signed at the latter part of, was that World's End? Would he? I'll look that up. But he officially started it in February, but his deal was
Revolution.
His deal was, he debuted at Revolution. Q4 of last year was when the signing was announced.
Yeah. I mean, these are good additions. We have, do we know how much they're getting paid? How much is Okada rumored to be paid? It was like $4 million per year or over a term of multiple years?
I think the numbers, it came out, it was, I was told it was not even close to being accurate. It was one of those like Tokyo sports things. But that the deal that was initially announced was not even close to, I guess, what he is making. But I have not heard anything about what he was making. Ospreay was announced as signing during the Full Gear pay-per-view, by the way. So way back in November.
Full Gear. Okay. Well, I think it's safe to assume that all three of these people are being paid more than $1 million per year, I think. Maybe multiple millions of dollars per year. So that gives you some sense of the investment, and what the investment of all of these things that we're talking about here is ultimately towards the goal of making the company profitable, which entirely hinges on the notion of whether AEW gets a good enough media deal renewal. I don't know. I mean, what so far, Ospreay out of the three, I know you've only got Okada and Mane here, but Ospreay has been the one who has grown his stock, I would say, the most. Mercedes Moné, I have to say, is the one whose stock has not grown the most. And I would put Okada in the middle. I guess we're all waiting for Mercedes Moné to finally get in the ring, which is her strongest skill set, as opposed to promos and whatnot.
Sure. Yeah. And with Okada, of course, we should say, you know, we're recording this on Thursday, the day after Tony Khan. I mean, good thing he's hiring the executives, because he's going to be out for quite some time. I mean, with this devastating injury suffered at the hands of his VPs. I mean, and I've worked in many a company. I've never seen VPs attack the CEO and founder in such a way. And I mean, I'm surprised. I'm checking out CNBC all day, the various tickers. I have not seen much news about it other than NFL.com. Last night, I'm surprised that the business world is not taking the impact of this. I mean, this could start a trend throughout different companies. You know, who knows?
Right. I mean, it's it harkens back to what was the, like, Latrell Sprewell, who choked his coach.
Yes.
But I mean, I think about, you know, a lot has been said about the media and their conduct in various press conferences and media conferences, but clearly the next question that has to be asked on the next media call involving Tony Khan is, hey, look, you fired CM Punk following CM Punk shoving Jack Perry and choking him a little bit. Where's the firing for the Young Bucks and Jack Perry after they punched you and Meltzer drivered you?
That's a great question. We'll get to ask that next month, if the media call, if he's able to do it. So he could be not healed up by now. I don't know. And he's got the NFL draft, and boy, what a,
maybe this is all 4D chess to like, but now they're going to show him. I mean, when is Tony Khan seen by the rest of the non-wrestling world the most? Perhaps on draft day. And tonight, as we're recording this, I want to see the Jaguars war room. And are we going to see a certain member of that team in a neck brace?
That's right.
And think of all the chatter and the eyeballs that this will generate, which may or may not be significant. I look forward to it.
Yes, I heard, I read that Fightful reported that he was in a neck brace last night during the taping of Rampage or something. Not Rampage, because Rampage is live. What is he? The Ring of Honor, something like that. He was backstage and he was wearing a neck brace and things like that. So he's selling it. He's selling it. But yeah, as far as these other executives, QT and Rocky are what they are. Peppermint will kind of have to see, that's going to be kind of hard to see whether that's good or not. The Kosha Irby one is really interesting because of all the different things he's being tagged of doing.
It sounds like a lot more than what Raphael Morphy was doing, right? Whose duties he's taking over for in terms of at least the live events. But this is a lot more marketing, finance, human resources, licensing, consumer products, and other lines of businesses. So, and it is a bigger title, right? COO.
Right. So he's going to obviously have people that are reporting to him, and we'll obviously try to probably look to bring in some of his people and so on. The live events, we'll talk about that. That is that to me seems to be a pretty big, important thing as we're watching these shows. And even, they're saying, oh, some crowds are louder. I didn't think the Daily's Place crowd last night was that loud. And I think it kind of hurt in spots where you're like, wow, this is very quiet at some spots. And I think it is a big question for them. We talked about this last time, is what can they do? Why aren't people seeing AEW enough as something like, I have to come see this when they're coming to my town. I have to go see Will Ospreay and Okada. Like, how do they get these AEW fans to be like, it is worth my time to go? What can they do about the live event experience? Not necessarily the in-ring, but just the experience around it to make it more of an event where it's like, you have to go. And that's going to be a big challenge for them. How do you make it so fun where people are like, I want to go back. And I think the one good thing, one positive anyway, a couple of positives, obviously he had the extended work with WWE, but he's also working in pro sports and college sports with Clemson. And to have that experience of working for a team, you kind of can take some of those ideas perhaps and bring them in. So I'm interested to see over this next, really probably over the next year, how that improves. And if they do things that are different to make the experience better, where people go and they're next time they're coming, we have to go because it was so much fun.
Yeah, I guess if we look at the attendance for Dynamite, which is the cleanest comparison that we have, although you should keep in mind, I suppose, that there's a lot more volume, there's a lot more shows, and there's two tapings per week as opposed to prior years where there was only Dynamite. But focusing on Dynamite averaged in the quarter 4,100, which is well down from the 5,600 it did the prior year this quarter. So yes, attendance is down, even if total attendance is up because you're running a lot more shows. And I think it's like anything in wrestling history, you can nickel and dime and talk about promotion and local marketing, and that's all great and important. But the most important thing by far is stars, matches, and things people want to pay to see. What's cooler right now? I hate to make this about WWE and AEW, but I have to. Cooler right now, WWE or AEW?
WWE is. Oh.
Yeah. You're gonna say this on the WNF4W network.
I'm risking my checks coming from Tony Khan. Hopefully that in his absence, he's able to pass it along. Maybe Kosha can send some money over like Tony does. But yeah, it's undisputable. I mean, it's undisputable. If you watch both products, there's more fans than and the product just seems hotter. It just has for quite a while.
I think what we're learning is it's not zero, or it is zero sum. It is more zero sum than maybe I thought it was at a certain point. And this is not a case of a rising tide lifting all ships, as W has gotten more popular with fans. That has not helped AEW. And I would say to the contrary, it has hurt AEW. The need for AEW to exist was strong in 2019 because WWE's content was terrible. Because I'm not sure what changed over these years. Something has changed over the last few years, and it has improved the quality of the content in WWE, and the need for there to be an AEW is less. And maybe in that time, there's been some internal things that have happened as well. But a lot of this is just external in terms of there needed to be a strong alternative. The company with by far the biggest reach and platform was dissatisfying a lot of fans and talent too. And that caused a lot of fans and talent to move over to this alternative. And, we all know the story. Lo and behold, there's a billionaire and a TV network, and it happened. But now, and I think everybody's kind of underestimated the degree to which Vince really did hurt WWE, and the removal of him is really allowing WWE to thrive. Whereas it was held down by Vince's eccentricities with creative. And now that's been removed, and WWE has been able to satisfy a lot more people.
So interesting to me that, and probably because we're in the bubble, that people can only, they're like, I'm only going to choose one to watch. That for some reason they can't find themselves to be like,
No, that's a social media internet thing, I think.
yeah, it is. Yeah, to an extent. I think there are some people that maybe there's like, I need my wrestling itch scratched, and I'm only going to go with one, so I'm going to go whatever feels better to watch, I guess. I don't know. I'm fascinated by some of that.
And it's all a fight for time, right? It's like that Netflix CEO, Reed Hastings, said our competition is sleep. But the point is that everybody is fighting for time. And in the case of WNAW, if W is a more attractive show, then it is eating up the time that you might have otherwise spent with AEW.
Other big highlights that I know, the international relations deepened in this quarter, both with CML L and Stardom. There was a lot of CMLL crossover. I just want to say CML, CMLL crossover on AEW TV.
Consejo Mundial de Lucha Libre.
Si, senor, yes. There was all types of, yeah, and both Collision and Dynamite, Rampage, and so on. And there was probably five, six, seven wrestlers or so, give or take, and just different matches and so on. And obviously, so the Blackpool Combat Club teasing will be eventual matches in Mexico, which would result in Bryan Danielson to have a checking off a lifetime box in his retirement chart with taking on Blue Panther down there. Tony Khan met with Stardom president Taro Okada, the other Okada, head of Big Business that was in Boston, Massachusetts. And obviously, we learned that Stardom and CML. I found this interesting. So we did the story a while ago that David said, Stardom and CMLL wrestlers are going to be taking part in Forbidden Door this year. However, so far, like when they've mentioned Forbidden Door, they mentioned only AEW and New Japan. So they haven't really said these other groups are going to be part of this too. I don't know if that's going to come later or if that's just in the branding not going to be part of it. So I thought that was interesting so far. Obviously, we're, 2 months away, give or take. But
I
with these.
wonder if it's a fact of like there is an agreement between AEW and New Japan in terms of bearing the expense of this show. I would guess that that's what's happening there, and CML and Stardom are not a part of that.
True. That could be it. That could be it. And also, I was interested if whether kind of like how AEW's international business is doing in terms of like, they're not touring in other countries other than Canada. There's been no plans other than the big All In show. Nothing saying that, we're going to be going overseas, or we're going to do a show in Mexico, or we're going to. So there still has, we're 5 years into this, and there still hasn't been any show outside United States, Canada, and the one show in London. There's not a case of we're going to do a show and, we're going to spend a couple of weeks over in Europe, and even if they're going to be taped, we're still going to be kind of hitting up some fans over there. And I just, I kind of wonder, I wonder, because we don't get these numbers or anything really, how they're doing overseas, and if the brand is growing, and if it maybe it's not growing as much. Obviously Tony Khan said that, they're the number one brand, I believe, in the UK, where it was his terms last year with All In. But in terms of live events, which you think if they're really that still that strong over there, they do pretty well. There hasn't been anything announced yet. And I'm curious why that is, and if the CMLL tie-in, obviously they've been working with AAA for a while, why they haven't done a show in Mexico yet.
I would think doing a show in Mexico, I don't know that there's a great chance for that to be profitable, right? Like, I guess if you're just thinking about what's the best way to not lose money, which is probably the profit function of this company at this point, you're spending more by running TV overseas in terms of the way that you get people over to that country and the travel expenses that are involved versus just running a show nearby domestically. I mean, it's going to be less expensive. And I would think, and we see some of these gates through Polestar. I mean, in fact, even the pay-per-view, Dynasty, which is after this quarter, we know did just over a $400,000 gate on ticket sales. I'm sure that pay-per-view costs a lot more than $400,000 to put on. But most of the money that they're getting on these shows is through media revenues, through the TV rights. I wouldn't be surprised to see some show in conjunction with All In this August, because what All In is the 25th, I think, and there'll be TV that needs to be done. Although there was last year, and they could just tape it ahead of time. But maybe they would do another show somewhere in Europe or even the UK in terms of doing Collision or maybe even Dynamite. So that's something to think about.
He did say that this show would be the only show in the UK this year. All Dang. In. Yep.
Well, that's,
which
UK
I was
is just
about.
One country.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah. So we'll see what happens there. I should point out, Tony Khan did say in the last media call that the first quarter business was much better.
Well, of course
revenue
was
higher because of.
Of course it was. Because you're running, what were they doing last year? First of all, their media deal. They didn't have Collision in Q1 of last year, so they didn't have any incremental revenue that Tony Khan said exists for Collision. I think they went from roughly 45 AAV to $75 million AAV. So there's that. They weren't running Collision live events, so of course the revenue was higher. And those are the two biggest pieces. So it's like a no brainer. Yeah, you inserted all this volume, and your TV partner did give you extra money for running Collision. So of course revenue was higher. Is profitability higher? No idea.
Other notes, big notes. AEW did big business for Revolution, the Sting retirement show. The event did over $1 million gate. Obviously, really strong merch. Their concessions are even high due to that one article that revealed some information. The show, I love that stuff. The show was sold out and did the third most pay-per-view buys in AEW history. This is obviously a major success. For so many reasons, obviously the Sting retirement being the one of them, which I think a lot of people were surprised by how many people were really into seeing the Sting retirement, and obviously such a well-known figure in wrestling, but he's not the level of the upper level, the Hogan, Austin, Flair, try not to think in those terms. They he's up that high, however. I think they, obviously they treat him with respect. There was a lot of interest for this, and they just he looked great throughout his entire run, and everything just hit, and this was a pretty, pretty perfect night for them. I still don't understand how they mistimed the show to the point where he's doing his speech at the end and it cut off. I was so annoyed at that. I'm like, there was so many things you could have just cut out and say 15 minutes, even if you end the show at 11:45, which is absolutely okay. Like, just cut something out just to ensure no matter what, we have to get his goodbye at the end and in full. And they did put it on YouTube later, but still, it's in the moment, right? You have to have people remember to go the next day and all those things. But as I said before, I think this could be a market for them if they have other people.
Like retirements, the retirement market.
Yes, the retirement market to do
more wrestlers should retire. I agree.
Exactly. Adam Copeland, comes to mind.
Oh,
I
God,
don't.
you're trying to kick all of them out.
That's right. That's right. Paul White, you know, some of these just older guys, you know, they need a final home. But yeah, I just thought it was an interesting template because WWE doesn't do this. They don't
No.
do the ease out and farewell, good night. It's a, and granted, because most time wrestlers will leave, retire somewhere else, and are allowed to come back for one final match because WWE just doesn't want to do it. Will that change in the Levesque era? I don't think so. But so many wrestlers, you know, they retire, but they retire. It's just like fighters. They retire until the next big payday opportunity comes. They're like, well, my boots and trunks still fit. I'll get some cardio. We'll go earn some money, you know?
Yeah, it is a lesson that if you have a retirement that does feel real to people, which this one did, that it can do some strong business. But it is coupled with the fact that of all the things that you could justifiably criticize AEW for in terms of creative, I think one of the things that have been the biggest success, and not necessarily an expected one, is how well they handled Sting and how well they, you know, used him as a legend in a way that was at least beneficial to Darby Allin. And he was really, you know, just really well presented in a way that was, you know, really satisfying for fans. And he had this nice multi-year run here in AEW, and then it came to an end in a way that did not feel like a gimmick. It wasn't his career on the line or something. And nobody expects Sting to like really have a match anytime ever, really. And it drew more than anything what seems to have been a really, really strong pay-per-view number. Yeah, it's just one of the things I've sort of noticed in studying data is that when you have like major life events, a debut, a retirement, or when someone unfortunately dies, that's when you get a lot of attention on people. And, you know, a retirement is a big deal. And if it's real, a real retirement.
Right.
And I do have, by the way, this big, big news here. I've not mentioned anywhere else. This is an exclusive just for Josh Nation's Punch Out. I do have, there's not that much newsworthy in it, but I do have the Greensboro Coliseum Complex user agreement between AEW and the city of Greensboro. And I can tell
Oh.
you that the rental fee on this building was the greater of $5,000 versus 15% of gross after-tax admission receipts with a rent ceiling of $55,000. So you're only going to hear that here.
Exclusive. Wow. I mean, let the debates begin as to whether what those numbers are and who knows. Someone will try to pick that apart. I don't know how, but you know, let Reddit try to mess around with that.
So they paid no more than $55,000 to rent the venue, is what I'm getting there.
It's so fascinating to in some of these things that we learn, how much venue rentals are. I used to work in arenas, I've mentioned before, for a hockey team. I have no concept of how much it costs to rent the venue for a concert. But like things like, I remember when you reported on the Puerto Rico
Yes.
subsidies, and was it
Yes.
three? Is $300,000 or
I believe so,
500,000?
yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
it's kind of fascinating. Like that's how much it cost. That's how much they credited for working that venue. And then you hear about, you know, Greensboro, they sold, you know, $55,000. It's fascinating how much all these different places cost for and we actually kind of learn the numbers. Unions obviously play a big role in that. You know, that's a big thing about working MSG in some of those New York markets is the union expenses. Same thing with Boston, I guess, as well, over a
Right.
certain time period and
And
all
as I'm
that.
going through this document here, just skimming through it, the rental of the venue is not the only cost that's associated with using the venue. You have to pay for the for each chair was $3, each table was $10. You had to pay a certain fee to use the microphone, to use the internet was $150 per show, and then it cost $10 to actually get that internet on the Wi-Fi, and most importantly of all, $5 each for towels.
$5 each what?
Towel.
Oh, $5 each towel. So, okay, got
Yes,
it. Wow.
yes.
Boy, this is you're not going to get these numbers anywhere else. I'll tell you that
No.
much. I'll tell you that much. And then finally for the big headlines, Dynasty, the first ever pay-per-view is announced for April. And the most interesting aspect of this, not only the AEW is adding another pay-per-view, but their domestic streaming purchase options expanded out from the much beloved Bleacher Report to YouTube, pay-per-view.com, and Triller, I believe some other options for their next three shows, and then they're going to see what happens after that. I think this is interesting for a couple reasons. One, it was the first time since what 2019 that they're expanding out past the Bleacher Report relationship with domestic streaming pay-per-views.
As I recall, All Out 2022 One was also on Fight in addition to
Really?
Bleacher Report. Yes.
Okay. That's very possible. But in terms of, yeah, the past few years, and I he has not given a straight answer, big surprise as to why this is, what the impetus was. And some people thought, oh, this is the beginning of the end with Bleacher Report and or WBD with Jones Bleacher Report. I think he doesn't want to throw them under the bus, but that
Yes.
the issues during Revolution,
Absolutely.
which got finally, and this isn't the first time that people have complained, but certainly he had to make a statement about it. This is such a big thing, to the point that they opened up domestic buys. They opened up Triller that night, an hour into the
Right.
show, saying if you want to buy here as well. And so he hasn't thrown them under the bus, but certainly that's a acknowledgement that Bleacher Report just can't handle what they're looking to do, and they can't be trusted. So you have to give them a bunch of, instead of giving just one option, give them five or six and be like, no matter what, there's a place to buy for you.
And clearly there seemed to be some sort of technical issue on Bleacher Report's end. They couldn't handle the big influx of orders that were all happening around 8 o'clock as the pay-per-view was about to go live, which created all sorts of problems for customers who had just dropped $50, had gotten charged, including me, but were not able to watch the pay-per-view that they were just charged $50 for. So that's obviously a terrible customer experience. It's not hard to imagine that there were some discussions between AEW personnel and Bleacher Report personnel or WBD people, and they agreed that okay, we're sorry, maybe we messed up, and we're going to allow you to do this other thing, which we've allowed on certain other occasions, at least All Out 2021, where yes, we'll let you do fight and stuff like that. So that's what they've done here, and of course, Tony's not going to say a negative word about his TV partner who holds the key to this entire business's future.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing, of course, that complicates is getting the data from all these different sources as well. So we'll see what these
Sure.
numbers come out and all that stuff. So other notable happenings happened throughout the first quarter. Tony Khan announced return of AEW rankings for the first time since 2022. No one is really sure why. WBD, speaking of them, promoted AEW's 2023 viewership and demo success. They put out a press release announcing that. Dynamite debuted a new set following Revolution and quote unquote a new season, which I'm always fascinated by
A
when,
new logo.
yes, a new logo. And I love when WWE does the new season. I guess it's a new season. The shows never stop, so it's hard to think new seasons, but
The
that's.
KPIs that are a part of this program, they will be updated with the new logos.
Oh, good. Good. It's a very keeping on brand, as you say.
Yes.
Preemption season, or sorry, AW, that's their bringing Forbidden Door to New York City's Arthur Ashe Stadium, or they said they didn't announce. Andrew Zarian reported this, and then they weren't. There was some sort of change, so now Forbidden Door is going to UBS Arena, I
Yes.
believe, and we'll see
Yes.
what's happening with Arthur Ashe Stadium, if that is indeed happening for September or not. Preemption season began for the Collision and Rampage shows due to various basketball programming and such. And other things, AEW announced details for Double or Nothing 2024. Returning to Vegas once again, the MGM Grand Garden Arena, so not the T-Mobile. And obviously, this question comes about with these tentpole pay-per-views. Why not try them in different cities? So we'll see kind of how things turn out this, but they really love going to Vegas. So we'll see. Sammy Guevara was suspended by AEW for kind of his unwillingness to stop the match or didn't listen to the referee or whatever in that quote unquote classic with Jeff Hardy on Rampage. We still have not seen him since. And then Matt Hardy confirmed his contract was up and he was offered a new deal. And it specifically go into the details of that. We don't know if the new deal actually was like a per date deal or kind of what the deal was, but he ended up in TNA. So it looks like Matt Hardy is gone as well. So those were all the notable happenings. We'll get to the live events and we'll kick it over to you with some looking through this PDF, which you can only get at WrestleNomics.com. Your subscriber over there. And so total live events during the month, there were 20 or during the quarter, 24, 13 live Dynamites, 10 live Collision dates. Total Collision shows were 11 over the day. Trying to do more of these combined tapings with AEW and or with a Dynamite and Collision. There were 13 Rampages. There was one, which obviously are all taped, one Battle of the Belts, which is taped, and then one pay-per-view, which was Revolution. And yeah, that
Yeah,
was
so our
about.
numbers match there on the event count, yeah?
Yes, they do. Yep,
Great,
24.
great news.
Great news.
Okay. Yes.
Let's kick it over to you for some. We'll go through this document, some AEW KPIs from the first quarter, and I guess we'll start it with the average viewership, P2 viewership. for all these different shows. Yes.
So Dynamite's viewership is down 11% from 907,000 to 810,000. This is excluding preemptions. Down 11%. The cable originals on TNT and TBS are basically flat. They are up slightly in P2+. So if you want to use that as a benchmark for consumption on these same networks, I think that's a pretty fair comparison point. I know people will point to cord cutting in general, and I think it's debatable the degree to which what's a fairer comparison to compare your show down. Your show is down X percent. Well, let's adjust that for the number of homes that this cable network is in, maybe. But what about the actual consumption that's actually occurring on those networks? I think that might be a fairer comparison. And what we're comparing here is cable originals, which are up 3% versus Dynamite being down 11%. That's largely driven on TNT and TBS by the college basketball that occurred in March, March Madness, which is no women's college basketball here on TNT and TBS. That was strictly a ESPN deal. So you can't credit this to Caitlin Clark. Rampage is down. How much does it say here? Yes, it does.
15.
Rampage is down 15%. Again, worse than TNT and TBS cable originals. And Collision is at 414,000 viewers on average, which is how do you really assess the success of Collision here? It is a far cry from what I thought it might be in the summer of 2023. Its viewership is really getting quite comparable to Rampage's viewership, which is, I guess, to take my own words to account, I think I had said many times, you know, this can't be just another Rampage. If it's really going to contribute heavily to AEW's next deal, it has to do better than what Rampage is doing. And it has to rank quite highly. And the ranks are in the teens, I believe, on the average for both of these shows, Rampage and Collision, but it's certainly not another A show like Dynamite is.
Right. And obviously, you know, if you're a network, and this has been talked about before, you're looking at what is comparable that we could put in there, right? So if they're like, yes, we can put in a movie and get, you know, play Captain America for the 3,000th time, right? Mm-hmm. And get 500,000 viewers, 600,000. We don't have to pay for it other than licensing. Or they put it in a DC movie or something else. You know, it's that question of live sports, but if live sports aren't, and we'll call AEW live sports for this discussion, if AEW is not outperforming what they could do with reruns, movies, those type of things, then you can't, then that certainly hurts the potential they could get into a deal. And this is what all this is all about. You know, we're supposed to be trying to build up towards this deal, which they're still in the exclusive negotiating window. If you believe Tony Khan, he won't say when it is up because he doesn't.
You asked, you tried.
I did. I tried. I finally got on these calls and started asking some questions. I had one lined up for last time too. But so I asked and was, I practiced. I said, I wrote it out. I'm like, what is the question?
Did you do it in the mirror? You have to do it in the mirror and rehearse.
Yeah, exactly. I fired myself up. But I wrote out, I'm like, what is the best way I can ask this where there's not wiggle room? It has to be a yes or no. And I said, that's what I asked. So yeah, there's a date, but he didn't want to give out because basically, I can't remember what phrase he used, but it was like, didn't want to be damaging to the relationship or something.
Soon. He doesn't know if he had permission to say it or something like that. I don't
know. He used the thing like, I didn't want to damage something. Suddenly it was just a little extreme of like, I mean, this is just kind of what networks, you get the date out there so people can start to, people are interested in this stuff in terms of like, I would want to bid on this. I mean, they're running out of time here. And again, if you compare this to other deals, you compare this to WWE deals, which is probably the most obvious comparison, even though Mark Shapiro said they'd go right up the day before.
That's right.
And sign a new deal, which nobody believed one bit.
When does this deal expire?
I think it's still the end of the year, by the way that he's talking.
End of the calendar year.
Yeah, because he has said.
We're on the same page then.
Yeah, even Tony Khan has said 2025. Like he's saying 2025 for in some of his, you know, promotional phraseology for this new deal. Van said, when? I can't imagine we'd go like 3 months into 2012. I imagine a clean cut at the end of 24 would probably make the most sense.
The ambiguity to me is whether it expires at the end of September or the end of December. But I think it expires at the end of December.
I would say I can't see any reason why it would. It'd be funny if it did at the end of September. And WWE, obviously, they have that 3 month window where they need Raw to go. Can you imagine that? If that just flipped to WBD for like 3 months? Oh my God. Can you imagine that?
I guess I can understand, what was I going to say? I can understand maybe in his case, the cautiousness when you're not WWE and you're not a company that has been a sustainable, very profitable business for decades, but you're an unprofitable startup company whose entire business future is weighing on this relationship. I guess that said, I mean, I hope at a minimum, I think it would be pretty smart to let people know, you know, as hopefully this question continues to get asked, are you still in the negotiating window now? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Mm-hmm. And I hope he would confirm that. I mean, I guess you could just go to the networks themselves, Fox and Amazon, whoever, and say, okay, we're out of the negotiating window. Let's talk. But it is exceptionally cautious on his part.
Yeah. I have also asked, I will say, other sports media reporters that would know this, and they're not sure. And they're asking now too. They're like, huh, that's right. So there's some intrigue, and there's some, not a lot of people know when this date is. So we'll keep working.
You know who's out of the exclusive negotiating window?
I mean, who would that be?
The NBA.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that got announced the other day. Yeah.
And whatever happens with the NBA and Turner could affect AEW in terms of opening up time slots and maybe freeing up money. Who knows?
And you mentioned Caitlin Clark earlier. I think I saw a headline that WBD may be interested in some WNBA games this upcoming season as well. Who knows?
That was reported. Yes, yes.
Interesting.
And I think that the WNBA deal is up around the same time as the NBA deal. So it's not a long, the WNBA deal is not a long deal. It's like a 2 year deal or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that would make sense. They're essentially subsidized by the NBA right now, but I don't think there's been any season that's been more, one person that's been looked forward to more in a season, the WNBA, than we're going to get with Caitlin Clark. So that would certainly make some sense, and we'll see if they can make some hay with that. Let's go to the 1849 demo rating.
But what about the demo? The demo is also down. It's down not as badly for Dynamite as the total viewership is. The Rampage Delta is more gentle. It's basically flat, I guess you could say. It is a 0.12 in this quarter and last year's quarter one. And Collision is averaging the same demo rating as Rampage, whereas the demo for TNT and TBS Cable Originals is basically flat, up 1%. So you've got a flat network. This is, of course, excluding the AEW stuff. Meanwhile, you've got a negative 7% Dynamite and a negative 4% Rampage. One thing I can add here is that the comparison that we should make is the one that you pointed out, that what is the replacement programming? What is, you know, I mean, take a look at TNT or TBS's lineup on primetime whenever they're not airing sports or AEW, and it's mainly movies or the Big Bang Theory. And you ask yourself, what kind of economics does that generate? It's a much, at least like per hour, it's a much cheaper type of programming to air. It is often pointed out to me that the quarter hour before AEW starts airing is lower than the first quarter hour, or really any of the other quarter hours of AEW itself, whether this is Dynamite or Collision, or I'm not sure if this applies to Rampage, but, and then the quarter hour immediately after AEW is lower as well. That's good. If that wasn't the case, that would be bad, but I'm not sure how good that is given the fact that the AEW show that we're considering is in the prime time slot.
Mm.
What I would like to know, which I don't know, is like, we do have some rerun data, but like, what do those movies and the Big Bang Theory, we do have quite a bit of Big Bang Theory, but what do movies do? What would a movie do, you know, on a Wednesday night from 8 to 10? We don't really have examples of that, right? Because something else is actually there, and we don't have alternate universes, unfortunately, to examine. So it's a little bit of a guessing game in theory.
I imagine those movies have to have the quarter hours have to be so like spikes, because you have people that are flipping through and they drop in and they're like, they can either choose to start from the beginning or they just start right there and like, oh, I love this scene in Avengers. I'm going to watch this for half an hour until the ad break. And then I'm going to jump around to something else. You know, it's that I need something to do during halftime of this game or between periods of a hockey game or something.
Right.
Let's go to pay-per-view buys. And if you were to flip this, I find this very interesting. If you were to flip this on its side, since All Out in September 2023, the buys have gone up every single pay-per-view. So they're so maligned and people, you know, oh, the ratings, blah, blah, blah. And yes, they are down. They weren't trying to have a, you know, death knell every week on social media about this. But when it comes to pay-per-views, they consistently have been trending upward. And so as much as there is some consternation about the booking and this doesn't make sense or this or blah, 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 their pay-per-views, which is one of their big moneymakers outside the revenue, the TV deal, keep going up and up and up. And that's a, that has, I mean, that's a huge positive.
Yeah. I mean, there is truth to some of the stereotypes around AEW in that this is a show that does appeal well to hardcore fans. And what's your most hardcore product? It's probably the pay-per-views, right? Because this is, we're asking you to drop $50 to watch something. And that's what I think of as, you know, being the product that's for the people down towards the end of the funnel. You know, the people on the $10 tier who really like your product, they're going to drop $50 once a month or once every other month to buy it. And it's still connecting with those people. I think this Revolution number is a bit of an anomaly, right? I'm sure Dynasty is not going to do 180. Mm-hmm. But yes, this is an encouraging trend. Now, we did start this trend with an especially you know, disadvantaged All Out 2023, which is following just a week after this All In pay-per-view. That was a really big deal. Sure. So I think there's some dilution on that one. But nonetheless, I mean, the Wrestle Dream, we believe, did around 113, Full Gear around 130, World's End around 140. So it seems like it's, and then it's definitely still holding up here, right? If we look back at prior years, I mean, in 2022, you did have your Revolution doing 175 and Double or Nothing doing 165. So I don't know if the average is going to be on par with, say, 2022's average. Maybe even 2023's average. I don't know. But they will do more buys. And I think that's a decent strategy to do more pay-per-views. And I think, as I said last time we did this, maybe even raise the price eventually. Because these people down towards the end of the funnel, they will pay a little bit more because they are so hard to break. And you should be compassionate about that and appreciate your fans and not take them for granted. But they might be willing to pay a little more than $50. I mean, think that the WWE era of pay-per-view ended at what, a $60 price point? And yeah, that was those years ago before inflation took effect. That's 10 years ago. So you could charge more than $50 if you wanted to.
Yep, good point. And let's see, we'll go over these other ones. Live events, we talked about that a little bit earlier. Company did 24 live events this past quarter compared to 17 the prior two quarters, obviously with the addition of Collision. And number of events for Dynamite was 13. Do you want to go over the ticket numbers?
Sure. So total attendance naturally is up to almost 100,000 in this quarter, which is up from last year, which had 93,000. And that's, yeah, disregard my colors here, which I need to fix, but, and that's kind of surprising, right? Given that, you know, there's way fewer events. There's 17 last year versus 24. Nonetheless, the total for last year is almost equal, is almost on par. But it is a little higher, this quarter. And I can tell you, I got this broken down elsewhere by event type and in terms of sequence, so not year over year, because we don't have year over year to look at for Collision. But the Collision, of course, started out very strong in this Q2, which is skewed by the fact that there's only like 2 weeks in Q2 for Collision at first last year. But it has continued to descend sequentially over time. And Dynamite is now, I'm going to make a WWE comparison. Dynamite is now averaging an attendance that is lower than the WWE house show average. So there's something happening there. I think we already talked about it. It's How much do people want to pay to see AEW? How many stars are there? How many compelling, matches are happening? Why do I feel like I need to see it, especially when the biggest product is doing much better than it once was?
I also wonder, and this is a kind of a demo thing and something that I'd be interested, I'd love to get more market research on, is does AEW attract families to the extent that WWE does? And I, anecdotally, I would think that they don't. And families, obviously, a family of four, that's four tickets as compared to, someone's going by themselves or going with a buddy or something like that. I just, I wonder just because of the brand recognition and the familiarity, obviously the company is super hot right now, if WWE attracts more families and AEW does not attract as many families, and perhaps over time, maybe some of those families are just kind of falling away from it, or the kids have fallen away from it, and that could affect some of the ticket sales as well.
Yeah, and I don't know that it's a worthy endeavor to directly try to address that, because directly trying to address that sounds like, we need to get dress up Art Barr as Beetlejuice or something. that just feels like an avenue that leads to poor decisions. I think data is great, right? But problems don't always need to be addressed with, like, when you see a decline in attendance, and maybe let's say you do have data, and I'm pretty confident that what you're saying is true, right? That there's fewer children by percentage who are attending AEW versus WWE. But to try to directly address that, I think risks betraying what this brand is supposed to be about.
Right. Because otherwise you become, if you're the challenger brand, you want to be different.
Yeah.
It's the same. You're still making hamburgers, but you're just making it differently. And if you are going to be, if you're going to attract, if you're going to try to make a pivot and say, we want less blood, we want less this, you become who you're trying to be. And then you lose that identity and people are like, this isn't what I have. And that becomes, a little bit more adverse. And again, if kids are, there's like, we only have so much time to devote to one wrestling product. We want to do, maybe the kids will float with everything. They'd be like, I want to do the one that I want to watch the one that my friends are talking about at school versus one that my uncle, my young uncle, or my cousin is talking about.
Yeah, I guess, speaking on like the broadest level, I do think there is enough of an appetite at this point in wrestling culture and culture at large to sustain a second wrestling company. I am curious if Tony Khan had not launched AEW in 2019 and let's say had waited to this moment, I don't know if it works out in at least in the same way, right? If Vince is gone and there's no disgruntled talent and fans to capitalize on, it's a lot harder to make this work. But whatever, let's say the window was open and he jumped through it and he made it this far at least. So but I do think there is enough energy now that you've started it to sustain. I mean, if the media environment and the media companies will pay for it, there's enough here to sustain a second wrestling company.
Yeah, I think so. And it was it's been well documented. It was a perfect storm with the Young Bucks and Kenny and Cody and these guys that became free agents at the same time. And yeah, it was a perfect storm, and it was a void that, for whatever reason, the other companies just were never really able to build to a point where they could be this financially successful. And we're talking about the TNAs and Ring of Honors and, all these other smaller companies never got there, and they just never could get that backing to be, they tried to be different, but just didn't have it. And this is just kind of the perfect storm for us. Yeah. It's definitely sustainable. Number two, no doubt. And then finally, YouTube views, anything interesting here? They're down a little bit.
No, I don't know what that means. It is true. It is a fact that through Social Blade, I've learned that in Q1 they had 130 million YouTube views, down from last year, down from the prior quarter. How meaningful is that? I don't know. It's not a massive creator, but it's whatever. It's YouTube, and that does connect to revenue, to some extent. It's a much lower ARPU, right, than TV is, but it's not encouraging. But I don't know that it's a disaster signal either.
Yeah, lowest quarter since Q4 of 2022. So interesting. We'll see if that keeps up in the quarter ahead. So we'll go over some so new IP created during the quarter. We had Dynasty, Arrivals. We talked with the arrivals of Mercedes Moné, Kazuchi Okada, Deonna Purrazzo, and of course the real difference maker, Black Taurus, is now in the Tony Khan family officially. Departures: Andrade El Idolo, Kevin Kelly, who was fired, and then Mike Santana. Also, his contract was, I believe, lapsed, or they decided to let him out early, what have you. But those three guys are gone. We had some signings and then re-signings. Re-signing being Jim Ross, whose contract expired in February. Of course, he had this guy just cancer surgery, broken hip surgery, and signed a new deal. Not sure how long the deal was for, but he says likely his last year as an announcer. That's probably best for his health. Queen Amanada officially signed. Brian Keith officially signed. Zack Knight, who's Saraya's brother, officially signed. And then Jake Roberts was re-signed to a deal as well, which made me think, is at some point, does AEW introduce their own Legends program, maybe calling, AEW Idols or something like that, talking, or I sorry, AEW Icons, after, Sting being known as the Icon for so long. If they want to start associating with some of these people and paying them something to be associated with the brand. So that's kind of popped in my head when I saw Jake Roberts was re-signed.
Yeah, it's some of these people I had forgotten or maybe did not even know in the first place were assigned. But I do have something I can share here, something
Oh,
that
good.
this will also be exclusive only to this program here. But the people with AEW slash Ring of Honor who have gone the longest number of days, who are members of the roster, according to Cage Match, would have gone the longest amount of time without having a match.
Oh boy.
Parker Bordeaux, is he part of the releases?
He is. He's gone.
He's okay. Well, Cage
Now,
Match isn't updated.
yeah, he's now in AAA.
Oh, see, okay. Tay Mello, she had a
Correct.
child recently.
Yep.
Michael Nakazawa has more than a year. Jamie Hayter, who's been out with an injury.
Yep.
Bandido is injured, right?
Yes.
Stu Grayson was part of the releases, correct?
Yes.
Jack Perry, who's recently come back. Britt Baker, what's going on with Britt Baker? Is she
Injured. So
injured? Okay.
supposedly, yeah, her back, and she's talked about getting ready to return, but there's no date.
Mark Davis injured.
Broke his arm. Yep.
Scorpio Sky.
Scorpio Sky is an interesting one. So
201 days.
he came back as part of the Collision launch, and he had been coming off a long time injury, and then got hurt again. But there's been like nothing about him. So I thought at one point he was going to be, if he was ready to go, he appeared. He was at an Impact show, and obviously he has a history with Frankie Kazarian and all that. I just wondered if there was going to be some sort of a release at some point. But yeah, I have heard nothing about Scorpio Sky.
Penelope Ford, 190 days.
Good question about her. She came back a little bit with Kip Sabian. They're married, and I believe she suffered a miscarriage, if I remember right. But that was a while ago. I don't know if they're just not using her or not, or I assume that she's like okay to return, unless they're trying it. I'm not sure. That one's been kind of quiet too.
I'll stop this at some point, but Kota Ibushi, who also I've noted
Hurt.
here, also had one match elsewhere during this gap. We know what happened
Yes.
there.
Yeah.
Realistico.
Jalisco, I think, is visa issues.
Kenny Omega, who's got diverticulitis.
Yeah.
Keith Lee, who
Keith.
appeared in the background in a W, what is it,
He
Hall of Fame or
was at
something?
the Hall of Fame because his wife Mia Yim was there.
Okay, that
Yeah,
makes sense.
he was injured because he was supposed to be part of that meet match with
Right.
Miro and so on. And
The
but
meat match, that's what it
I'm
was
not
called.
sure. I'm not sure what's going on. He was supposed to take on Swerve months ago,
Yeah. Yeah.
and then that was the Dustin Rhodes spot instead. Yeah, interesting.
Peter Avalon, who's also had at least one match elsewhere.
Peter, he was released a while ago, and I thought he was brought back for just per appearance type deals. I thought that was kind of the deal, but it's
Yeah.
possibly he's a Ring of Honor guy.
Marina Shafir,
Interesting. Okay.
Miro,
Yep.
Roosh, Juice
Yep.
Robinson. I'll go through a
Injured.
bunch of them. Wheeler Yuta,
Injured.
Preston Vance, Ray Phoenix,
Injured.
Ortiz.
Injured.
Adam Cole.
Injured.
Ruby Soho, pregnant. Danhausen.
Danhausen is, he's doing indies. He's working for GCW.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But I get the sense that he may not be back. I don't know. Nothing. I don't know anything. I'm just like, he's
strong merch seller, apparently, though.
Yeah, that they're not using him, even like Ring of Honor stuff or the Best Friends stuff or anything like that. So I don't know if that's the case. We don't have anything for him. That's an interesting one.
Jeff Hardy.
Jeff Hardy is recovering from a broken nose. And,
all right, that's the Sammy Guevara situation.
But it could be a case, that now Jeff is gone. If they want, I can imagine they'd want to use Jeff for a few things, but
his deal was too. I think Fightful reported that his deal was going to align with Matt's, but then ended up not because of rollover injury reasons or something.
Yeah, I can see them wanting to have one more match with Adam Copeland before calling it good.
I'll do this quickly then. Ethan Page, Madison Rain, Sammy Guevara, Satnam Singh, Adam Page. Adam Page has gone 53 days without a match. Mm-hmm. The Blade, Kip Sabian, Killswitch, Jeff Jarrett, unfortunately, has not wrestled in 49 days. Nick Wayne, Riho, Darby Allin, who's hurt, Colt Cabana, Brandon Cutler, Mercedes Martinez, and Christian Cage. Those are all people with at least 30 days absence from matches, not TV.
Yeah, some of those are interesting. Some of those are hurt. Madison Rain came back from an injury and she had that awful match with Deonna Purrazzo. She's going to be a coach anyway, so it's not really a lot of value from her. But yeah, it's some of the, like, the Scorpio Skies, Penelope Fords, Danhausen, Preston Vance was one. I assume he's part of the LFI group. But what I find interesting with some of those names, especially if they're healthy, they're not using the Ring of Honor, you know? And to me, like, if you have these, you're signing more people, but you have these people that are still around. Those releases are very kind of random that they did in the first part of April. We'll talk about that more the next episode, but there's a lot of other people. I think that you don't want to see people lose jobs, but other people are just, they're not using, as we kind of went over. So I'm surprised that, the names are kind of very scattershot, put it that way. And then they have to rehiring one of them anyway.
Yeah. Okay.
People that returned, the Young Bucks, Mark Quinn, who is now injured again, Pac, and Kyle O'Reilly. Injuries, CJ Perry. I don't even know if she's still under a deal at this point. Roosh Vikingo, who was, I don't know if he's on a per date deal or what the deal was there. Jeff Harris mentioned, then Darby Allin, who suffered a broken foot in an AEW match just before he was set to go climb Mount Everest. You can't script this stuff. Quotable quotes. AEW's Tony Khan claimed there's a double standard for the reaction of Jinder Mahal's WWE title shot that he received against Seth Rollins. He was comparing that to the people that were complaining about the Hook getting an AEW world title shot, if you remember that. So it went commercial free. Jinder Mahal is released, and they can make a Jinder Mahal versus Hook match if they want to, live on pay-per-view after that.
They could.
After that non-compete. Actually, I don't know if they're allowed to do the non-compete now with the new laws that are getting put into effect.
Maybe they could debut Jinder Mahal on Saturday.
Oh my God.
And test this new ruling from the Federal Trade Commission in the name of the workers of America.
Yep.
Let's put it to the legal test.
Exactly. What better AEW to lead the charge in this country? I like that. Jimmy Jacobs says AEW role doesn't really involve me writing wrestling TV, which a lot of people.
Where does it involve then?
That's a good question. That's a good question. Tony Khan on his WWE talks to WWD. Again, this is around the time with Raw rights. He said it's part of sports.
Yeah. Remember that when WWE is going to go to WBD, maybe?
Yes, I remember that. Seems like 8 years ago at this point. Yeah. 2024 is the next 2021 for AEW, according to TK.
He was referring to, I think, this was his way of hinting new signings, which ended up being Okada, Monet, and at least those two.
He did a media call during the Mike Core Sport Revolution, talked about the increase in pay-per-views, the rights renewals. We've been trying to get this, that's kind of obviously the big stories there. He commented on creating a safe workplace in AEW. And he was asked about that, I believe, by you and other people as well, on various calls and in interviews and so on. And said they have a committee of three people.
Yes.
And said
Danielson and two lawyers.
Yes.
Who shall not be named.
Right. There's a lot of ways for people to reach out and so on. But yeah, very kind of just Some of the things are easy to just say, this is what we do. And instead it's a run around the chart and trying to explain this stuff. Will Ospreay said that AEW offered a way better deal than WWE. Did not say if he was less of a grind or not. I'm not sure said that or not. Tony Khan said Jack Perry is doing great things in New Japan. And of course, that was before he got attacked, punched in the gut.
Yes.
Jack Perry last night. Mercedes Moné is perfect to be the face of AEW. See about that. Mercedes Moné said you can do so much more in AEW. You can do everything. It's one of the reasons that she signed. And she also said leading up to her signing, I know I'll be back in WWE one day.
It's probably a 3-year contract. So, you know, might as well start negotiating now.
Working those promo skills. And finally, wrap up with the forecast and other thoughts. Again, the big thoughts for me, media rights. Are we going to get any movement, any news, expiration of exclusive negotiating window? That's a big thing. Ad-free blocks. I'm always kind of curious if you've done research on this. When people go, when these shows go commercial free,
AEW has not been like WWE has had a lot of instances lately of having like commercial free. They say hour, but it's like 45 minutes.
Right. So I bring this up because that Samoa Joe Hook match was presented commercial free.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, okay.
And I was curious if if that really makes a difference or not.
Are you asking me in quarter hour analysis, does not having an ad in the quarter help?
Does it work? Is it just a stunt? Does it help the numbers at all? Like, what is it?
Yeah, I mean, ad breaks, there's no clearer story that I can tell you about quarter hour analysis and what affects the rating than ads. Ad affect the rating negatively. Absolutely. That's the easiest thing I can tell you about quarter hours. Everything else is much more difficult and debatable.
Do you think there is a market for how I'm not a huge soccer fan, but I watch some games and they will present ads with graphics on the screen and the commentators will mention it. That's how they're kind of, instead of doing ad breaks, because they can't really do ad breaks for 45 straight minutes. If there's a way to just kind of like, let you know, this is presented by so-and-so and so-and-so.
I guess the answer to that is whatever is it, do they make as much money doing that? Mm. And I would think that soccer has more inherent ad value than wrestling does for some reason. Mm. I think to some extent, would you say that we already do that in wrestling in terms of there's sponsors and there's, you know, the replay is sponsored by TurboTax or something like that. And Lord knows you can buy the mushroom Ric Flair drink.
That's true. That's true. I just wonder about that. There's a different presentation. Essentially, if you're not getting time for ad buys anyway, if you do things a little bit differently and kind of keep people focused, I guess, you know, go away, but you present the ads in a different way.
Yeah. I mean, picture in picture has been something that we hadn't seen much, if any, of until AEW.
Yeah. Now both companies are doing it. Yeah. I don't love picture in picture. I can't like, it's just hard to focus on the action because it gets smaller and so on. Yeah. Not for me. This is coming up. It'll be the second ever quarter with 3 pay-per-views and struggling attendance for weekly TV. We talked about that earlier, how they improved the live experience. We chat about that a little bit. And if we see any changes. And is AEW growing internationally? We talked about that as well. Any other thoughts for you coming up in this next 3 months, one of which we're almost all the way through?
Well, media rights is always the biggest story to this and any wrestling company or any sports league. And who are the other bidders? If it's not WBD buying all the content, which the fact that we're this close to expiration and there's no deal yet, I think every day that goes by makes it a little bit more likely that, well, for one thing, you're going to get to the end of the exclusive negotiating window and you're going to talk to somebody else and potentially sell some of that content elsewhere. Who are the other bidders?
Yeah, we haven't heard a lot about that. No, you haven't heard anything from.
Do you have any guesses?
John Orand. I mean, I'm going to think that as far as I don't see an Apple getting in.
No.
Netflix, I don't see. Prime, you know, possibly. Obviously, they have some connection with the NFL, so there's maybe some sort of connection there can be with Tony Khan, as he is a part owner or executive, I guess you could say, or whatever. Yeah, I mean, if I can't see them going streaming only.
No.
If a Triller really wanted to get in the mix, could they bid for a Rampage or something? That'd be exclusive,
Sure.
I'm just throwing out options, right? I mean, there's different options. I mean, ESPN, I don't see them getting
No.
involved. I mean, obviously they have the relationship with UFC. I could see some sort of dissuading being done there,
Yes.
but I don't see ESPN getting in that mix. That's the thing, is I don't see some that are, you have to be willing to go with a company that is not as well known, more of a renegade challenger brand. WWE is an easier meeting to put on the books because it's an established brand. It's super hot, and you could say it is worth a talk just so we can understand that we may not like this, but people do, and there's a reason all these people are going, all this stuff, right?
I may hate wrestling,
Right,
but
exactly.
God, people do like it. So
Yes,
let's take the meeting.
exactly. Get to
Yeah.
meet, get to
I
talk to
think
Triple H.
the most interesting candidates among those who are conceivably possible are Fox and Amazon. I could see, you got Fox that's getting rid of wrestling and felt like they bought too much. They overpaid for a product that they thought they could monetize, but couldn't monetize in the way they thought they could, and so probably lost money on it. But you could potentially sell them, maybe not Dynamite, but perhaps Rampage and or Collision for like literally a small fraction of the price that they're paying for SmackDown. And I think that deal might make sense for AEW. Because like a 205 is SmackDown. Maybe you sell Collision and or Rampage for like 20, 30 million or something like that. I mean, it's literally a tenth of the price. And maybe you can put that on FS1, which I looked at the program guide and what's on FS1 these days, and they're like literally replaying, games that happened a long time ago. They have nothing on there, so there's nothing in the way.
I could see that. I don't do you would you see it for broadcast? I don't know where you.
What's left? If CW's happy with NXT and doesn't feel like they want to put more wrestling on there,
I'm talking about for Fox though. Would Fox ha
oh, I
like I
see.
don't even know what night. Again, you're comparing it's what they have there already, and the cost and things like that.
I guess. I mean, I don't know what the other options are well enough, which would be like some reality show that's not that expensive to make. I think
Sure.
what was in the SmackDown time slot before was like Hell's Kitchen or something like that.
Okay. Yeah.
So probably something like it'll be interesting. Well, what they're going to put in there is going to be a lot more college football during football season.
Sure.
I don't know. I would be surprised. My sense is I would be surprised if they made a deal with Fox that it would involve Fox broadcast. Now, I could imagine a scenario where they have like a 4 times a year special on Fox when there it just happens to be a gap in the TV schedule and does fit in nicely. And that helps promote the cable show. But no, I would be surprised if it does end up on Fox broadcast.
Right. Peacock is out. I don't, obviously, there's all the shit going on with Paramount right now. So
Yeah.
I doubt they're going to be bringing on any big money deals. Yeah, that's the thing is there's not, we've been told for a year, all these streaming and all these different services and options and so on, but everything has changed so much that it doesn't seem like there's that many options now as there used to be. So it could be, I'd say, WBD or bust, but I would, and we know that he is getting some help from, is it Advanced Artist Management? Is that his company?
Yeah,
AAM?
Activist Artist Management, which is
Yes.
they helped make the deal, the initial deal
Right.
too. And I've talked about it since, but I haven't looked it up. Tony had something to do with the starting of that company, I think. Bernie Cahill
Yes.
is one of the key agents there. They're you should look at their website. It's an amazing website in terms of just there's all sorts of video in the background and stuff. But they're an agency that has a lot of musician clients. For one thing.
Gotcha. Interesting. Any other things of note for you? Or you think media rights is that kind of the big thing?
Ad-free blocks, yeah, I'm all for fewer ads. Like I said, it's that is the thing that affects a quarter hour rating. If you are a WrestleNomics subscriber, you are looking at those charts and tables. I mean, I try to in the table do a systematic analysis with conditional formatting that tries to emphasize when something did well and relative to expectations. But it's very complicated. And I think what the companies actually do, if they do anything, is they do the minute by minutes, which come out like the day later. And then you're able to actually factor out the ads and consider everything, not in these random blocks of 15 minutes, but you're able to actually isolate the segments themselves. Struggling attendance. How do you fix it? It's the same way you fix every wrestling business problem in the history of wrestling, is create stars. Yeah. I asked you this last show. Who are the biggest stars in AEW right now?
It's funny you ask that, because I've actually not mentioned this yet. I did an informal survey with almost 50 different media types, people that work in the business, and
casual fans. Did you get some casual fans?
A couple. Yeah. I asked them the question. I said, who, if a friend came up to you and said, who are the top five AEW stars? So you came up and said, you tell me about this, and who are their top five stars? So you could, a trio could count as one answer, a faction, something like that. So I'm not ready to release the numbers yet.
Wow. You're recording this data. This is not just a chat that you're having with people.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yep. And then I'm also going to ask them the same question about WWE.
Okay.
And I'd not ask you, because we just talked about this. And so I didn't want to skew the data pool.
Right.
But yeah, so the answers are fascinating in that there's a few that came to the top of the list, but the amount of people that of names that people answered, it was 24. 24
for AEW.
Yes.
Different people. Yeah.
Yes. And the WWE, we're just getting into it right now.
Yeah, my hypothesis would be that you'll have far more unique names named for AEW than for WWE.
100%.
And, yep. And in addition to that, the people that do get named for WWE are likely their flagship champions. I mean, almost by definition, if they are less frequent, if there are fewer names in the WWE case versus AEW. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So people really get hung up on active, like they have to be active now. So it was, the Omega is the MJF. So
Hulk Hogan?
Right. And like, they're like, can I say?
Oh, I see. Are they injured or not?
Yeah. I'm like, it's a casual conversation. So you don't have to say, well, this person isn't, you know, just if you're talking to somebody that was a casual fan, WB fan, wrestling fan.
Is CM Punk the biggest star in AEW?
That one person brought that up. Yeah. That was their answer. And there was all this, some people like, I it's hard to answer. And I like that it's hard to answer, because AEW is different. There's a lot of commentary that kind of came along with. So when I get all this information, I'm going to do a pod about it. Once I get the WWE stuff. And yeah, I think it's, and this came out of that conversation we had last time, in that there's organizations really seem to need tiers, and here's your top stars, and we're going to keep them on this pedestal and occasionally kind of switch people in and so on and so forth. And AEW has more of a broad, that tier kind of like goes here, but it's the people come in, out, and there's not a lot of consistency there, save for maybe a couple, you know, elite few, put it that way. But
and I think that's a creative and leadership issue. I think that's a case of wanting to please a lot of people. And Tony's a nice guy. I think that, you know, we need to talk about CM Punk's interview here, but he's a nice guy, but he's, you know, I think there's a lot of effort to please everybody and to protect everybody. And in protecting everyone, you protect no one, right? I mean, it's not completely true. That's what they're doing. Obviously, they push certain people and Swerve's a champion and all this. But when you try to protect everyone, you concentrate no value.
Right. Yes. And I think that's I think it's something we're going to be talking about. We're looking at the numbers, and we talked about this for nearly an hour and a half, and the numbers are definitely down. We'll see what they can do over this next quarter. So you can listen to conversations like this and more on WrestleNomics, WrestleNomics.com, available on Patreon. $5 a month gets you the championship tier, so to speak, the main tier. I won't say the intro tier. If you want to go inside,
main tier.
Yeah, if you want to go inside the numbers a little bit more, inside the data. I try and remember the intro to Pollock and Thurston. Got to get the numbers, get the data.
Yes.
And we got to turn this around. You can get the numbers for $10 a month. Obviously, you can find that as well. Brandon does a podcast every Sunday. Three out of the four are behind the paywall. One is for free. You can get them on YouTube as well. And obviously, you can get them on audio on the Patreon app. Anything I forgot there?
No, you're doing a great job. I'm just usually like, you know, sign up for the thing. It's $5 if you want to give me some money and, you know, support your local public broadcasting system and things of that nature.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah, you got Austin City Limits on there. Not Steve Austin City Limits, but Austin City Limits.
Yes.
Masterpiece Theater, those type of things.
Yes. Now we're false advertising.
obviously, check them out. Russell Novick's on social media. Brandon Thurston on social media. All good stuff. Brandon Thurston, thanks so much for going inside the numbers of AEW.
Thanks, Josh.
All right. Big thanks to Brandon for stopping by. Let's get to a couple of the other notes and happenings since we last talked on Thursday afternoon. My goal is to put this up Friday. And then my daughter was off for school vacation week here. My wife was off as well. So a lot of stuff came up Friday. And I'm like, I don't want to drop it Saturday, Sunday. And then stuff came up with the family and all the good stuff. But yeah, as you know, how life works. So we're here on Monday morning recording this and all types of stuff has happened since then. We'll give you a couple quick thoughts here before we get you out. Dave Meltzer over the weekend on Friday's Wrestling Observer Radio was talking about the WBD AEW exclusive negotiating window and said, I quote, not this month and not next month for when that window is up. And the window is opening up very shortly is what he said on Monday's WOR. So I asked him, I said, do you know what the date is? He wouldn't tell me. I think he knows, but he won't tell me. Good on him. So if he does or he doesn't, I'm not sure. However, not this month, not next month. That would obviously mean April, not May. So say the window is up Memorial Day weekend after Double or Nothing. As these things always turn out to be. It's weird. The window for WWE, I think, opened up around WrestleMania time. So kind of interesting. Those just happen to work out around big events. Anyway, so if that is to believe that it is, or we're going to assume based on not this month, not next month, that we'll talk June 1st. We'll pretend that's it, even though I don't know. So that would leave, what, 6 months? How's my math? 7 months before the deal is assumed to be up. If we're assuming, again, as Brandon and I talked, it's going to be up at December 31st of this year. So, you know, you're going to talk to different partners or potential new partners in that case, assuming a new deal is not signed. And then you're going to essentially just go out and see what you can get. And at that point, really the question is, if you move somewhere else, how many months do you need to really have it make a splash? How many months do you need to tell people that it's moving over and so on and so forth and all those things that are needed? Because we're in this bubble, I tend to not worry about that stuff as much as, you know, other people do. That you have to brand that it's on a different network. I mean, I think you're following this and you're listening to this show and other shows on Wrestling Observer, our website and other wrestling websites, and you're plugged in on Twitter and all this stuff. That you kind of, it's not too hard to find where things are going, right? So it's these these casual fans, people that drop in that aren't as plugged in. I'd love to meet some of those people to kind of understand what their lives are like. It sounds amazing to not know about any of this in some form or fashion. But so that would, if you want a deal, say a deal, negotiations start on June 1st, and you want everything, I would assume you're going to want everything wrapped up no later than Labor Day. So you have a 4-month window either way. You can celebrate and announce a big deal either at All In, imagine that, in front of Wembley Stadium, or even All Out the following weekend and kind of own the weekend, so to speak. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how that turns out. I think as so many people are. You know, we were talking on the show about some of the different potential landing spots. It doesn't seem to be a lot as we thought there were a year ago, obviously with Netflix out of it. I assume they're not going to be, you know, signing a deal with AEW. I would greatly assume that's not the case. Again, Prime, just based on the situation, as we mentioned with Paramount, kind of out of the game right now. Peacock obviously has a deal with WWE. Netflix has a deal with WWE. I don't see Apple making that pivot. It just doesn't seem prestige enough for them. That would be based on kind of what they have in the mix now and what they've been doing. Someone that watches Apple TV quite a bit. And then also the only sport I believe they have is MLS. They also have MLB as well, Major League Baseball, to an extent. So yeah, I don't. And Prime just announced this deal with the NBA the other day. So could Prime want to program another night by using AEW? That is a possibility. There's some speculation that NBA would gonna possibly move to Thursdays or be a featured night for Prime, leading into the NFL's package that they have, which is also on Thursday nights. You'll potentially try to program another night as well. Could be interesting to watch, but yeah, we'll, and obviously, you know, as I mentioned, Amazon has to do with the NFL. Tony Khan, obviously quite involved with the NFL. So we'll see what happens there. Brand has mentioned Fox several times. Perhaps he knows something more. I don't know, but, yeah, we'll have to see. But yeah, I would assume June 1st. They're not going to give them, you know, a 2-month window, but I think if that window opens up June 1st, wraps up by Labor Day, and then they know one way or another come what this deal is. Gives them 4 months to either publicize a new home or just keep kind of status quo and be excited and happy and all that stuff. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, a lot of conversation about Tony Khan's comments or his comment about comparing WWE to Harvey Weinstein while he was on NFL Network. I'm not going to give you 20 minutes on this. I heard it and I was like, I was in the car. I think I was about to go to the grocery store and I happened to just check my phone real quick. And I was like, wow. I'm like, he said that. I'm like, I want to hear it first. I heard it. And I was still surprised as I am now. It's not about feeding into, red meat for both sides, this tribal war, which, you know, Brian and I talked about as well online. But from a business standpoint, is that something that turns off potential suitors for a TV deal? Does that turn off WBD in any way? I wouldn't say that, you know, they would say, okay, we're out based on this comment, but is it kind of one of those things where they maybe want to lean away from it rather than lean into it? And given the era that we're in, even though it was a comment about a scumbag in Harvey Weinstein, it just comparing to the whole WB company versus Vince, I don't know. I just thought it was an unforced error, and I don't know. I'm just surprised he said it, and we'll kind of see how things play out. Dave, I also heard him. I heard it kind of, he was talking about it on the Monday Wrestling Observer Radio with Brian. And, you know, they were talking quite a bit about this situation and, you know, and Dave said, you know, these things are happening in a wrestling war. And I still don't think this is a wrestling war. I think it's a wrestling war in the sense that you have another player that's willing to dole out big money contracts. But I mean, are we kidding ourselves where if WWE really wanted to put their thumb down on AEW, that they could probably do it and hurt them pretty badly? I mean, does anyone think that that's not the case given the revenue that they have coming in, the war chest that they already have, the branding, the fact they have so many stars right now that are really well known. They're on the hot streak of all hot streaks. And I mean, I enjoy AEW. I've watched it since the start. I've covered it a lot for this website and so on, talked about it ad nauseum. And I prefer it more to WWE. And that's just WWE kind of drove me out from being a everyday follower of their product over the last stages of the Vince era. It just didn't do it for me. But I'm also not naive enough to think that AEW is a true financial competitor to AEW in a sense that they aren't comparable in so many ways that people want them to be. And they're still a startup. You know, these things take time and, you know, WWE has decades and decades of nostalgia and brand recognition and all that. And AEW has what, 5? You know, these things, the comparisons are always tough because they're two companies that do a similar thing. But if you kind of peel back the layers and compare the two things, it's so much different. And it's even down some of the presentation of the product, and now it's even less so than before. So I don't know. I hear the wrestling war stuff and perhaps as a justification of this, there's better ways, I think, to convey the differences rather than calling the company, comparing them to Harvey Weinstein. I don't know. I just hear that stuff and I just think there's a better way to do it. But yeah. So also, two other things before we get out of here. The AEW new hire that happened today or got announced today being Monday. Let's see, his name is, so it's a new senior marketer of live events. His name is Jeremy Flynn. We actually heard Brandon and I talk about this, that perhaps Koshay was going to want to bring in his own people, and he brought in one of his own people because he worked with Koshay Erbe at Professional Bull Riders, a TKO-owned company. I'll throw that out there. From basically less than 2 years, 2022-2023. Don't really know much about Jeremy Flynn. Let's see. He's with PBR. I don't know how much live event experience that he has. He was senior director of marketing there and live events before that. So I'm doing this on the crew. Long time in sales and marketing. Worked in worked for Arenas before. Yeah, so marketing events, marketing manager, sales and marketing manager. So he's only been, he's worked with Arenas, which is interesting, good. But as far as from a promotional aspect, it only looks like he's worked with PBR for like 2 years. So we'll see what goes there. Obviously, they need, as we mentioned, they need some help, AEW does, when it comes to bringing people in and making it a real experience. I won't rehash all the stuff I just talked about on the show, but they need something different. They need to have people come in and say, I want to come back the next time this is in town. And to the extent that people did before, they're not doing it as much. And is as much as someone that used to work in pro sports, for myself, it is as much about the live experience as in the whole experience from start to finish as what you actually see that you're paying to see, if that makes any sense. So they need a better way to do that. More energy, make it more of a party, more fun, and we'll see if they can actually pull that off. But interesting hire there, and I expect more of them to come. The Vince McMahon stock thing, that became a, I don't understand. It's funny how these stories that have been out there for weeks, suddenly a different outlet reports on it. Everyone's like, oh, this is happening. So the SEC, WWE had to do a, or TKO rather, had to do an SEC filing on Friday. And basically a finalized announcement based on a announcement that they had filed 2 weeks ago, and announcement's not the right term, but just bear with me, about essentially several officers putting up stock for sale, which included Vince McMahon, Nick Khan, and Steve, the owner of the Hawks, Tunin, I believe his name is, Kunin, something like that. Oh, my notes right in front of me. I should shuffle through some papers. So they're putting up some stock for sale. Vince is notable because he's put up all of his. I guess Nick Khan's put up all of his as well. But this was the same allotment, same information came out 2 weeks ago. And because this guy in Sportico decides to put this up like it's breaking news. It's not. It's just the finalization of something they announced 2 weeks ago in virtually like the same format. And everyone had 2 weeks ago. But for some reason, a different outlet puts it out, and now it is everyone's treating like this is the end. The same deal applies until the stock is actually sold. It's listed for sale. In all cases, the people don't have to actually sell it. If somebody lowballs any of these people, they're like, yeah, I want to buy 23 million stock, but or I want to buy half the stock, or I want to buy an X amount or something like that. Then they don't have to go through with it. It's just a whole, process. And for some reason, I just befuddled at why people think this is such a big thing now when it's been out there for like 2+ weeks. I guess they've had the stock listed since last September. I didn't see that, so even I missed that back then. But perhaps I'm the 2 weeks ago thing. That's when everything kind of came to be. That's when Brandon posted something on it. We posted something on it. So, and other outlets did too. So. And finally, in our weekend news roundup, I did a post for our website on Sunday about AEW no longer being available on Televisa Univision's VIX platform. And this got some attention. I had seen it. So 411 Wrestling had put something out about it on Sunday, I believe. I had actually saw something on it on X on Friday or Saturday. And so I reached out for a comment to both companies. And as of Monday morning, nearly afternoon. I have got no word from either as far as what the deal is, which is surprising. And so I said, I did the research. I found where it said the one difference, the big difference between what 411 report, which is a quick blurb, and they said it was available. There was a, you know, a statement that VIX had put out. It wasn't really a statement. It was really a support page that had the information on it, basically saying that AEW is no longer allowed in VIX. So VIX is this, it's part of Television Univision, available throughout Mexico, the Caribbean countries, and so on. So what was interesting to me was it was a multi-year deal, and that was just did not last multi-years. And then as I kind of was like doing, looking around some of the other research elements of it and researching like, okay, what about these other deals it has? Is this like a trend? Are they making a full pivot to Triller and their AEW Plus package, what they do there? I found that on Reddit, I found a thread that DAZN, AEW hasn't been on there for like 4 months. They also announced a multi-year deal. This was back in January 2023 for, you know, 42 markets, not like huge markets if you look at the list, but still that was another multi-year deal that just went into thin air. And Brandon had estimated that the DAZN deal is probably worth about $250,000 annually, where the VIX deal about $150,000 annually. So I mean that's you know what, almost $500,000. That's a significant amount, I would say, and nothing to sneeze at, but you know, so I'm always curious in these situations, you know, when multi-year deals go away, was there an opt-out? Was there who opted out and why? And from the DAZN end, there's a follower of mine that used to work for DAZN, Stephen Mühlhausen, I believe is how you pronounce his name. And he had said he used to work with DAZN and basically said that it kind of said that DAZN wasn't getting the numbers other than All In and a couple select episodes of Collision and so forth, maybe the debut and some select episodes of AEW programming, that essentially they weren't getting out of it what they wanted. He also then said DAZN didn't really promote them like at all. So AEW was great to work with and interviews he did with them, but in terms of there just wasn't a lot of promotion to DAZN, they didn't get the results they wanted. And then, you know, what happened is they DAZN decided to opt out instead. So there must have been some money there that they decided wasn't worth their while. I am also working to independently verify that too, just to be completely sure. But they, you know, that's of interest. And again, I have not heard anything from the AEW side of things. I have heard from somebody there that said their other international TV deals are doing great and are happy. And then, and I asked, well, what about what happened with these two? I really wasn't given an answer. I was told to, you know, to be referred to their PR contact who I had reached out to on Sunday and have not heard anything back yet. And I was told, well, it's Sunday, but it's Sunday, you know, news happens all the time around. So I don't know. So we'll see what happens there, but I don't really expect to hear anything, but it kind of caught a lot of attention on X of all places. And, you know, the usual kind of like there's some piling on, but also people seem to be happy that that they didn't like DAZN or they didn't like VIX and they didn't like both. They prefer Triller. But yeah, it's, you wonder if down the road, if they're going to start to do a thing similar to what WWE did, is try to package up all their international rights with one home. That make a lot of sense. They have, I believe, 12 different, it's like up to 12 different, I'd have to get the list of different international TV partners with ESPN in Australia. They have ITV. They have two TNT deals, one in Germany and one in India, I believe. I have to look at the list. So they have deals all over the place. Again, we don't know revenue. We don't know anything like that. But just for two of them, just to be lapsed after a year, or less than a year in the case of VIX, I thought was interesting. I'll put it that way. So not a case of concern, rather. But, you know, also like just what's the reason for it? There must be, if there is a good reason, if the DAZN, former DAZN worker, Stephen, is to be believed, then it just wasn't performing well, but it's also promotion. It was the same thing with VIX. And, you know, is it just a case of is it easier for AEW to really push toward Triller anyway, because it's so widely available everywhere. And So yeah, I thought that was kind of fascinating stuff. So I guess we'll track that and see how that goes. Again, not doomsaying, but it's just kind of interesting. This deal's kind of float away very quietly, and then you know it's our job to shine light on and say why, what happened out there? It's a big deal at the beginning, but I kind of faded away quietly towards the end. Why is that? Should we be looking at other deals like that? You know, what's up there? We want to kind of keep working on that one in the week ahead. So that's all the catch up on the news that has happened. Since Thursday, a lot has happened, and things never stop. Stuff will probably happen between now and I drop this in just a little bit on Monday. But you have a lot of choice in your podcast day. I greatly appreciate all the time spent me or any of our fine hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com. And yeah, thanks to Brandon Thurston. Thanks, y'all, for listening and supporting. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.